There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect. We're here to speak the truth on the real issues of the day in real time. How do we do that? I mean, let's just think about that. How do we do that? How do we get God back into the conversation? Sometimes we feel backed into all kinds of things, but what I'm talking about is actually not getting backed into a corner in conversation, but you actually being the ambassador of Jesus Christ in the conversations of the day. If you don't bring God's perspective to bear on the conversations that are happening, then God's perspective is going to be left out, because the worldly, a worldly worldview, a non-God-centered worldview is not gonna naturally gravitate toward, hey, what's God's perspective on this? But that's your job as a Christian. It's my job as a Christian to be the ambassador of the kingdom of heaven in the context of every conversation going on in the world today. So how do we do that? Well, we have resources posted for you at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there, sign up for the email newsletter. You can actually sign up for the podcast as well. You could share today's show with someone new. We'd appreciate it if you donate to the ministry and help us extend the reach of what we're doing to others. And if you're on Facebook, like The Reconnect on Facebook, and you can let me know personally what you're thinking about on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. Okay, friends, we have talked periodically over the course of time about the plight of our Christian brothers and sisters in the Middle East. Specifically today, we are going to talk about Iraqi Christians. Now, we have had conversations with Juliana Tamaruzzi in the past from Iraqi Christian Relief Council. We have had conversations with our partners at the Philos Project as they go and do relief work and meet with people on the ground to really come to understand how it is that the Christians living in northern Iraq and Syria actually, what kind of help do they want? And what do they want? Do they want to stay there? And if so, how can we help them stay there? And that's really the subject of today's conversation. You and I both know that the United States government has defined what is happening, what has been happening, what continues to happen in some places to Christians and other religious minorities in the Middle East as genocide. That ISIS is committing genocide against Christians and other religious minorities in Syria and Iraq. And so once that designation is put in place by the United States, then there's the question of, now what do we do about that? Because once you have labeled something genocide, you cannot just then ignore it. You can't put a label on it and walk away. You must act. You are called to act. Otherwise, the genocide will continue until the point where there are no Christians left in the Middle East, where the cradle of Christianity would literally be empty of Christians. And so what we're going to talk about today is, how do we as Christians and as Americans come alongside Christians in the Middle East who actually want to return to the towns that have been utterly destroyed by ISIS? How can we help Christians who actually want to stay and live there? How can we help them do that? We'll have an inspiring story for you that comes from the Knights of Columbus. The Knights of Columbus are actually committing $2 million to rebuild a particular town called Karamdez. It's a predominantly Christian town on the Nineveh Plain. It was liberated from ISIS control late last year. And the Knights of Columbus will move hundreds of families from minority religious communities in Iraq, especially Christians, but also Yazidis and Kurds, back to homes from which basically ISIS ran them out in the summer of 2014. So I want you to imagine for a moment that ISIS marauders showed up at your house in the summer of 2014, and you literally left with the clothes on your back, and they destroyed your home. They didn't just destroy the physical structure that was on the ground. They destroyed your plumbing system. They destroyed the infrastructure. They destroyed your the schools in your town, the churches in your town. They destroyed every manufacturing facility, every office building, everything that you can imagine. Your graveyards were desecrated. They left nothing untouched, undisturbed. They were seeking, literally, to commit genocide, to wipe the memory of you off of that piece of land. Well, fast forward 3 years, and your town is now liberated. Okay. ISIS is no longer in control. Do you want to go back? That's really the question. And you say to yourself, you know what? That's my land. And that's where I come from. And that's, you know, that's where I want to be. I've got a connection to the land and I want to return there. That's what's going on in the hearts right now of Christians living in refugee communities, refugee camps, essentially. And they want to return. So how do we help them do that? Well, the Knights of Columbus have said, look, we're gonna rebuild one town because we're inspired actually by the government of Hungary. The government of Hungary recently donated $2 million to save another predominantly Christian town that's called Telescov. So Telescov is about 1,000 families. The government of Hungary provided this $2 million in order to rebuild this town of 1,000 families that's predominantly Christian so they can move back and begin repopulating the Nineveh Plain with Christians who've been living in this region for 2,000 years. So like the government of Hungary and the Knights of Columbus, people are now asking who else will step forward and help? And so you say to yourself, well, that seems like something that is a natural fit for the United States government, right? That seems like something that we ought to be doing as an outgrowth of our commitment to liberate these people from the genocidal ideas and actions of ISIS. Okay, that leads us to a conversation that I think is profoundly important about a piece of legislation currently pending before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So what I'm talking about today is an item of business known as House Resolution H.R. 390. H.R. 390 will help to bring much needed relief and justice for Christians persecuted for their faith by ISIS. The House of Representatives actually passed this legislation in the summer. So it is sitting right now in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And you can actually help. This would be an action item for you where you could not only, if you want to, participate with the Knights of Columbus and what they're doing and participate with organizations like the Philos Project or Iraqi Christian Relief Foundation and adopting a family and helping them physically return to their homeland. But you also, as an American, can leverage the influence that you have with people in government, specifically the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, to actually get this item moving. So the first thing that you're going to need to do is call your senators and say, hey, get H.R. 39 moving in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Get that thing to the floor of the Senate. Tell them that you understand that there's actually no additional financial appropriations needed, that all of the money related to this has already been appropriated. So it's not like we're adding any cost. There's no cost adding here. This is already money appropriated for this kind of purpose. And we're just saying we want to see it used in this way. So if you wanted to make that phone call to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, you would do so at 202-224-4651. Again, that number is 202-224-4651. You're going to tell them that you want H.R. 390 to get moving because you want justice and relief for Christians who have suffered terribly at the hands of ISIS. So I have a press release here from our good friend, former Congressman Frank Wolf, and he basically is saying, look, there's a really short period of time in which to act on this particular issue. Frank has just returned from his fifth fact-finding trip to Iraq. He traveled to better understand what the current situation is for the Christians and Yazidis there in northern Iraq. So following the liberation of most of the Christian and Yazidi villages, there's been this increasing concern about how they're actually going to return home because the destruction is complete. And so not only is there obviously growing political tension in the region, because there are still lots of non-state actors who are roaming about, but the communities themselves there's no infrastructure. And so if you think to yourself, it's one thing to return to a town that's still a town, and you can go talk to the water department about getting your water hooked back up and the power department about getting your power hooked back up. But there is no water company right now, and there is no water treatment plant, and there is no power company right now, and there are no power lines yet. And so when you think about what these Christians are facing when they return to rebuild their homes, it's really almost unimaginable to us. It's almost unimaginable to us. And so as we examine what's going on in this part of the world and we consider our calling in it, you know, I am going to really encourage you not only to pray for the folks in this region and to leverage the power that you have as an American to call the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and tell them you want to see this particular House Resolution 390 get moving. Again, that number is 202-224-4651. And you can get more information about all of this from the organization that Frank Wolf is a part of, which is 21 Wilberforce. And you can check out the 21 Wilberforce Initiative and what they've got going on this front as well. What we're talking about is the Iraq and Syria Genocide Accountability Act, currently pending before the United States Senate in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Hey, I was able to get Frank Wolf on the line and have a conversation with him, and I want to share that with you now. All right. Well, we're privileged to have back with us today Frank Wolf. He was first elected to Congress in 1980. In December of 2013, he left the House of Representatives at the end of his 17th term to focus exclusively on human rights and religious freedom issues and concerns around the globe. In January of 2015, Congressman Wolf was appointed the first ever Wilson Chair in Religious Freedom at Baylor University. And that same month, he joined the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative, which you can find at 21wilberforce.org, which is a religious freedom group. So, Frank, welcome back to the Reconnect.
Well, thank you, Carmen. I'm good to be with you. And I follow you very carefully. So I follow all of your shows. Thanks for your good work.
Well, thank you so much. And we were certainly privileged to partner with you in the effort on the Religious Freedom Bill earlier in the year. And now we are back at it with you on this particular concern. So tell us, give us an update. What's happening on the ground, particularly in Iraq, and why people need to be mobilized right now in relationship to this particular bill?
More biblical activity took place in Iraq, as you know, because you understand the Bible very well. But Abraham is from Iraq. Daniel spent his entire life there, is buried there. Ezekiel is buried there. Nahum, we went to Nahum's tomb. ISIS just blew up about 2 years ago, the tomb of Jonah. So the biblical activity is so important there. Secondly, we've seen the Christian community drop from 1.5 million in 2003 down to roughly 250,000. There's both good news and bad news. The good news is now that ISIS is being moved out, you're beginning to see Christians returning to some of the Christian villages, Karakush, Bartella, and some of the others. I think few will go back to Mosul, but they are returning. Now you see trucks on the road. Secondly, there's fear. Every time you talk to Christians and Yazidis, folks who have suffered genocide, the first thing they say, we need protection. When they say protection, they're not looking for the 82nd Airborne. They're looking for an American military presence, perhaps a training base somewhere in the Nineveh Plains area where they train their police and they train their military. A Western base, American military, European military, NATO military, if you will. They want to return. They love their country. It's so rich in history and beautiful, I might say. But if they don't see something dramatic done, probably by the end of this year, I think they're going to leave. You now are roughly 250,000 down from 1.5 million. Most of the people with children will leave. Many are now filing for visas to go to Australia, Canada, some to America, some to other places. But if they see that America it really does something significant, such as the passage of H.R. 390, such as some other aid to rebuilding the schools, rebuilding the water systems, rebuilding the electrical systems, I think you're going to find a number coming back. So we are almost at a fork in the road. No action taken by the end of the year. I think we will see the end of Christianity within the next couple of years, within our lifetime. So this is not 20, 30, 40 years from now, probably in 2, 3, 4 years, there'll always be a remnant. There'll be some elderly 70 and 80-year-old people, but for all practical purposes, all the young will leave. If they see progress, I think you'll find most will stay, And many will actually return because many are in camps or in housing projects in Lebanon, in Turkey, and other places, live in a very grim condition. They will come back. So this is a critical time, one, to pass H.R. 390, two, to urge this administration to have a bold action to do some things to provide protection. And I think, sir, we're at a very critical point. That's why your radio show at this time is a very critical time.
So, Frank, I want to I know the answers to these questions, but I want you to tell people the answers to these questions. First of all, you know, didn't the United States already designate what's happening to the Christians, the Yazidis, and other religious minorities in the region? Didn't we already designate it as genocide? So haven't we already done what we need to do? And then the second part of that question is, wow, the way you describe it, there's no schools, there's no roads, there's no electricity, there's no water systems. Why would anybody want to go back?
Well, one, the designation did take place, but it was just a designation. It was a resolution. It was significant, and I think Secretary Tillerson last week restating it, but it takes more than words. It's now taking deeds. It's like if you see a hungry person say, attaboy, I hope you're going to do okay, but you're not going to give them some food, then you really haven't followed through. So they need to see some deeds. The designation was important. The redesignation by Secretary Tillerson was very, very important. But now there has to be some action. Secondly, they love their country. I mean, this part of Iraq is magnificent. It's beautiful. They love it. The history. I mean, Abraham from Ur. We've read about it in the Bible, but it's not Sharia. Daniel is buried there. Daniel lives his whole life there in Babylon. Nahum, Ezekiel, just go right through the Bible. So they don't all want to come here. They like to stay in their home country. Third, they have seen words coming out of the United States on this whole refugee crisis, on all you're going to help refugees. Their attitude is, wait a minute, why won't you help us that want to stay? I had a Catholic priest say to me, Mr. Wolf, help us to stay. But if you're not going to help us to stay, help us to go. But their priority is they want to stay. They want to raise their family. And this, these people speak Aramaic. This is they speak the language of Jesus. So it'd be like if you're from Nashville, why do you want to stay in Nashville? It's because you were born there. You love it. It's your hometown. It's where your parents were raised. It's where you went to school. And these are highly educated people. These are doctors, they're technicians, they're scientists. So they want to stay in their land because it is a rich, biblical land, and they don't want to leave. But if we won't help them, then they're all going to leave.
So again, we're talking with Frank Wolf. He is a distinguished senior fellow. He has just, for the 21 Wilberforce Initiative, he has just returned from his fifth fact-finding trip to Iraq. So you've got a report actually posted at 21wilberforce.org under the resources section called Northern Iraq 2017 Report. I would really recommend, if folks want to know what's happening on the ground, that's a great place to go and get information that's fresh, that's timely, and that is put together in such a way that it will not only satisfy your mind, but it will move your heart. And so we're going to have a conversation, Frank, with folks about what they can do. But what do you see as a couple of the things that you would like to encourage our listeners today? You know, as a Christian, as a former congressman, as a person who is concerned about religious liberty and freedom and human dignity around the globe, what are a couple of things you would like to ask our listeners to do today?
One, what they ask, you can pray. Two, you can urge your senators to pass H.R. 390, Congressman Chris Smith and Anna Eshoo's bill. Three, churches can adopt Christian families in little villages. I mean, if a church in Tennessee or a church in Virginia were to adopt a village and help several families. We talked to one Christian woman who had been sold 20 times. She's living in a one-room place. She's looking for somebody to help her. So if the church, you can't adopt the whole village, you can't adopt them, but if a church would adopt families, there's a lot that can be done. So pray, urge your senators to support and pass H.R. 390. And lastly, help those who want to stay with different projects. Knights of Columbus is putting $2 million in. One church could adopt a family and rebuild a house. You can rebuild a house over there for $5,000 and $6,000. My church, yeah, you adopt families in different countries. You can adopt a family in Erbil, a family in Syracuse, a family in Barcella, a family, if any, go back, I doubt, to Mosul. But so there's a lot that can be done in a little, small, bite-sized basis that would make a tremendous difference. And if we do, and this administration does what I think it can do, I think we will save Christianity and the cradle of Christendom.
Well, Frank, I so appreciate the multifaceted approach that you are encouraging people to take. We're certainly, you know, we certainly need to be people who are praying, but we also need to be people who are politically active, and then we need to put our own money where our mouth is. And so I think that particularly as families begin to think about what they're going to do in the holiday season, this is a really great opportunity in the next 90 days. This is the critical window that you and I both see closing. In the next 90 days, if folks would just go ahead and adopt a family, one of the things that I want to say to our listeners is, if you know the story of Ruth and Naomi and Boaz, and you know what it means to be a kinsman redeemer, that's what Frank is talking about. He's talking about becoming the reality of a redemptive person in the life of a widow, in the life of a woman who was sold 20 times. You can be her kinsman redeemer in Jesus Christ. And so that is really the compelling emphasis here. And so thank you, Congressman Wolf, for all that you're doing. And thank you for joining us today on the Reconnect on this very, very critical effort to encourage the Senate to pass H.R. 390.
Well, thank you, Carmen, for having the show. And the group that we spent the most time with over there was Samaritan's Purse. So if you're not sure where to go, Samaritan's Purse runs a hospital right in the Mosul suburb. They run feeding centers. They run, Samaritan's Purse did incredible and does incredible work. So if you can't find the family, you can go directly through Samaritan's Purse.
All right, friends, I don't know about you, but it's always convicting to talk to our friend and former Congressman Frank Wolf. It's really beyond our ability to imagine what our brothers and sisters in Christ are facing in northern Iraq, and obviously in other parts of the world as well. But that's where we're focusing our attention in this particular conversation. So if you are looking for a way to bring your personal influence to bear on this situation, you know, there's really three ways, in my view, to do that and to do that quickly. Number one is to pray. Please never underestimate the power of prayer. Praying is not doing nothing. Praying is doing something. And so in this circumstance, please pray today, because even if we are able to get, you know, this H.R. 390 piece of business moving in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and I certainly hope we are able to bring our collective power to bear on them in order to do that on behalf of Christians who have suffered enough under the hands of ISIS. But even if we're able to do that, that doesn't meet their need today. And so we need God to be meeting people's needs today in ways that we, to this point, have not been effective in doing. And so be praying for people today, and then call the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The number is 202-224-4651, 202-224-4651, and tell them, get H.R. 390 moving. Because you want to see justice and relief for Christians. Let them know, look, these people have suffered enough at the hands of ISIS. We recognize that what's happening is genocide, and we want to prevent Christianity from being wiped out of northern Iraq. So we want to help people stay there who want to stay. H.R. 390 provides for that possibility. All right, friends, The Reconnect is a listener-supported ministry by people just like you. We'd appreciate it if you took a moment and visited us at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for our email list. We'll send you additional information we don't have time to share here on the air. While you're at the website, become a reconnector. Reconnectors are our ministry partners who partner with us prayerfully and financially to expand the reach of the ministry to more and more people. Again, you can find out more information at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Hey friends, I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect. We're here putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. We're also trying to keep God's people in the cradle of Christianity today. We're actually trying to be a part of the solution to the genocidal aspirations of ISIS in relationship to driving God's people out of the Nineveh Plain. So we're talking today about Northern Iraq. We're talking about the Christians of Northern Iraq. We're talking about what not only we as Christians can be doing in terms of praying for and then partnering with organizations like the Knights of Columbus, the Iraqi Christian Relief Council, the Philos Project, others who are working diligently to keep Christians in their homeland and help them rebuild their lives there. But we're also talking about what we can do as Americans to get Congress moving on this. The House of Representatives has already overwhelmingly approved H.R. 390. H.R. 390 is an item of business. It has a big, big, long name, the Iraq and Syria Genocide Accountability Act. So it's H.R. 390, the Iraq and Syria Genocide Accountability Act. And it provides financial support for these communities to be rebuilt. And you say to yourself, well, I'm an American taxpayer. I'm not sure I want my taxes used in that way. This money's already been appropriated. It's just a matter of how it's going to be distributed, disseminated, and used in this part of the world. So the money has already been appropriated. What we want the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to do is get moving on H.R. 390 to get this particular item of business onto the Senate floor and to get it to a place where the Senate can vote on it and we can get the help that we've promised these people to them. All right. So in order to advance that conversation a little bit further, we're going to continue talking about the plight of persecuted Christians in Iraq and what our national security interest is in helping them. So I'm pleased to have back with us today Tom Farr. He's the president of the Religious Freedom Institute and director of the Religious Freedom Project at the Berkeley Center for Religion, Peace, and World Affairs. He's an associate professor of the practice of religion and international affairs at Georgetown University. And so we're having a conversation about not only this item of legislation, H.R. 390, but we're having a conversation about the larger issue of what advantage it is to the United States of America and the people of the United States of America for there to be religious pluralism in the Middle East. Specifically, we're talking here about Iraq. So, Tom, first of all, welcome back to the Reconnect.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Talk with us about the importance of religious pluralism for peace among people.
Well, it's really, it's sometimes difficult to achieve. In fact, it's almost always difficult to achieve, but it's very, very, the principle is very simple. Pluralism means stability. And to put it in the context of the Middle East, or for that matter, in the context of Western history, when you have a country that is so dominated by one religion, and history suggests it really doesn't matter what that religion is, and it is so dominant that it refuses to provide any level of tolerance or freedom for other religions, that society is going to have problems. And it those problems tend to result in religious violence. They tend to result in the modern era in religion-based terrorism. This isn't only about Islam, in part it is, but if you look at Christian history, particularly Catholic history, but also Protestant Europe after the Reformation, when you had dominant religions that excluded others, you had huge problems. And, of course, we have had centuries of warfare over these issues. So pluralism isn't just plurality. It isn't just, you know, you have a few of these and a few of those. That's plurality. Pluralism means that at a minimum you have lots of religious groups, and they tolerate each other at worst, or at best, they really honor the equality of the other. So in that sense, religious freedom and pluralism are pretty much the same thing. Full equality under the law and valued by culture in a particular society, something that historically we have had in this country. So if pluralism breaks down in Iraq, let's just get down to the nitty-gritty here, let me rephrase that. Pluralism has never really existed in Iraq, but now is on the verge of complete elimination or any possibility of it. And what has happened, of course, as most of your listeners doubtless know, that the minority, the non-Muslim minority religions of Iraq, fled, most of them, many of them into Kurdistan. The Christian minorities, most of them, fled out of their homes in the Nineveh Plain, which is in the northern part of Iraq, into Kurdistan, where they have, many of them, remained for the last 3 years since ISIS took over. Many of them have left and completely left that continent for other places. If Christianity and other minority groups, such as the Yazidis and the Turkmen and others, completely leave Iraq, the possibility for pluralism, as we've justified it, disappears. So keeping the Christians in Iraq is, I think, perfectly reasonable position for any group to take on moral grounds, especially one like the United States of America, which is not, quote, a Christian nation, but is made up of a lot of Christians and is founded on Christian and Judeo-Christian premises. There's absolutely nothing wrong on a moral level, in my view, saying we need to take care of these people, we should be protecting them, we should be providing them aid. But my point is that it's much broader than that. This is the answer to your question. This is a national security issue for the United States. If we do not take the steps necessary to ensure that the Christians and the Yazidis and the others can return to their homes, step one, and survive, step two, but step three, be integrated back into Iraqi society in a way that gives them a pathway to a kind of equality, not just survival, but equality. If we don't set that up, we're harming our own children because we're ensuring that Iraq and, frankly, many of its neighbors continue down the path of being a majoritarian tyranny as a place where religious terrorism is incubated and terrorist groups are going to be welcome in some sense, even after the defeat, the military defeat of ISIS, as it were, which okay. we all hope for
right.
very, very quickly.
So what I was going to have you pause right there,
sure.
because I think that, first of all, you've said like 10 things that I want to return to in conversation here. But I think I want to start right where you ended, because it sounds to me as if the posture of the United States in terms of we're now just going to kill terrorists, we're not going to be involved in nation building, is actually exactly the opposite of what you're saying. So I think that part of the challenge that we face in listening to like literally the news of the day and then having this larger conversation about the reality that what people need and want is safety and security, the opportunity to rebuild their own homes, their own communities. But help has to come from the outside in order to do that. So I want you to make that case to all of us. Make the case that this is not necessarily about nation building so much as it is about actually, I mean, there's a selfishness here, right? There is a self-preservation agenda here. The United States of America and her people actually benefit when people around the world have the opportunity to flourish and have the opportunity to live in places where there is not only religious pluralism, but where people, no matter what their particular religious identity, have the opportunity to thrive. And so can you link those all of those concepts together for us?
Sure. That's very well said, Carmen. I think it's true of any society. And we could pick out a country in sub-Saharan Africa. We could pick out a country in the Far East. And the same would be true. Communities that are able to, particularly religious communities that are able to live in freedom and to flourish will help those societies build stability, and that will help the United States. But I am putting that argument on steroids because I'm talking about the region of the world that is incubating the kind of terrorism that we saw in Barcelona, we have seen over the last several years all over the Western world. We've seen it in our own country. These people are not to be negotiated with. They, whether we're talking about the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or ISIS, they are terrorists that have that are motivated by an ideology. So what we're talking about here is not so much nation building, which is a heavy laden term. associated with all kinds of institution building and democracy. Perhaps that's down the road. But what I'm talking about is convincing stakeholders in these societies that keeping Christians involved and other minorities is in their interests. It's not our wagging our finger at them, which we've been doing for 20 years as part of our religious freedom policy, and it hasn't worked. It's not our saying that, you know, you ought to adopt the First Amendment of the United States. It is making a self-interest argument to them so that they will see this as necessary for their own flourishing. This, in turn, will, it won't destroy, but it will undermine what is now virulent, the flourishing of these violent Islamic terrorist ideologies that threaten us. So what we're talking about here is not a silver bullet. It's very difficult. But if we focus only on the issue of Iraq and say, what can we do? We can do something to ensure the safe return of Christians who are now outside on the borders of Iraq into their ancestral home, sometimes 2,000 years old in the Nineveh Plains, so that they can regain their place within Iraq and contribute to the kind of pluralism which means stability and at the end of the day will help prevent the return of the ideology, not make it disappear. It's a problem that will probably be with us for a long time, but will prevent it from flourishing. Religious freedom, in short, is a counterterrorism measure, and that's what we need to be doing in Iraq.
All right, friends, we're talking with Tom Farr. He's the president of the Religious Freedom Institute at Georgetown University at the Berkeley Center for Religion, Peace, and World Affairs, where he directs the Religious Freedom Project. We're talking, you know, if we were going to say narrowly what we're talking about House Resolution 390, but very broadly, we're talking about religious freedom, particularly in Iraq, and we're talking about the prospect of assisting Iraqis who are Christian and who are other non-Muslim minorities from that region who have fled during this span of time when ISIS has been so much on the move in their country. We're talking about assisting them in returning specifically to the Nineveh Plain and rebuilding their lives and what kind of help and assistance people need on the ground to rebuild that kind of a life and what that would look like for it to be a place where not only are they tolerated, like people put up with Christians, but that they would have the opportunity to actually live as an integrated people with Muslims and other non-Muslims, the Yazidis and the Turkmen and others. So give us a little bit of the lay of the religious landscape in Iraq, because I have just listed off a couple of religious minorities that people would be completely unfamiliar with. And then also remind us that, you know, Islam is not monolithic in much the same way that Christianity has her diversity. Islam has its diversity as well. So can you walk us around a little bit in that?
Sure. First of all, Iraq is, I'm guessing, on the order of between 90 and 95% Muslim, but they aren't all the same, as you say, the same kind of Muslims. The numerical majority has been in charge, that is to say, the Shia majority, which is the numerical population majority, has been in charge of Iraq since the fall of Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was part of a smaller group associated with the Sunni minority, which had ruled Iraq for many years, including under the British. So you had, if you can think about it really in sort of Protestant Catholic terms, those who understand the history of Europe understand the fierce disagreements and the violent disagreements among Protestants and Catholics. We're still at that point within Islam. So to say that you have a kind of plurality within Islam and Iraq, which you do, you have Sunni and you have Shia, does not answer the question of pluralism. You need non-Muslim minorities. And you need them not just to take up land and take up space and to survive in tiny enclaves where they are threatened from without. You need to move them back and give them an opportunity to survive at the beginning. That's what we're talking about. Rebuild their villages, protect the lands that they have lived on for all of these centuries. But then we have to go further and make the kinds of arguments that I referred to earlier, and that is arguments to the Shia and the Sunnis of Iraq, so that they understand, and some do, but not enough do, that protecting the Christians and the Yazidi minorities and the Turkmen and the other non-Muslim minorities is in their interests. It's actually in the interests of Islam, however you look at it. Now, I might just tell you that one of our projects at the Religious Freedom Institute, I also, as you mentioned, run a program at Georgetown. The Religious Freedom Institute is a separate and independent entity, and one of the projects that we are doing is working with Muslims in the Middle East who already get this. They are stakeholders who already understand we, our societies, our religion, have a problem here. And if we allow Christians to flee our countries, we are harming ourselves. We're harming our own religion. We've got to grab hold of that. The American diplomatic establishment doesn't do this kind of thinking, but it should be doing it. However, none of this will make any difference if all of the Christians that we're talking about now decide, hey, this isn't going to work. The Americans are not going to help us. Nobody else is going to help us. If we can, we're going to get out of here. And that is the most immediate problem that is being focused, that we're focusing on with this H.R. 390. The H.R. 390 doesn't deal with the anti-terrorism things we've been talking about or the broader issue, which is very important. But you have to take baby steps. And the first step is, if we do not get funding from the United States government to the Christian and other minorities that we have declared as victims of genocide, then they're going to leave. They're going to flee. They're not going to go back to those villages in the Nineveh Plain of northern Iraq. And the prospects of pluralism and stability will go with them. So it's all connected, Carmen, but we do have to take it step by step. So perhaps you'd like to talk about H.R. 390 at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you've hit on, you know, probably the question most people are asking, because it sounds like, wow, this is going to cost a lot of money. And I think that it's really important to note that H.R. 390 requires actually no appropriation of new funds, right? It authorizes and directs the utilization of already appropriated funds to entities
that are not being spent for this purpose.
That's exactly right. So just talk us through that a little bit. Like, what is in H.R. 390?
Well, H.R. 390, thank goodness, and you'll, I'm sure, go back over this, passed in early June the House of Representatives by, I think, a pretty overwhelming vote. But it's been languishing in the Senate, and that is the legislative problem that we've got to solve, and hopefully you and your listeners can help with that. But here's what the thing does. It's called the Iraq and Syria Genocide Emergency Relief and Accountability Act. It says, look, we have appropriated money for the relief of people in Iraq and Syria. We should be targeting this money strategically for those who need to be restored to their ancestral homes that we have declared as victims of genocide. So let me just remind your listeners, both Secretary John Kerry, the Secretary of State under President Obama, and Secretary Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State under President Trump, have formally declared that ISIS is committing genocide against Christian, Yazidi, and Shia Muslim minorities in Iraq. We have said that the United States acknowledges and declares that this genocide is taking place. That's a big word. That's a terrible word that no one should just let trip off their lips as if it were just something that were a descriptor of a particular a bad kind of war. Genocide is being perpetrated. And yet, the monies that we are spending are not being targeted against to the victims of genocide. H.R. 390 says, U.S. government, thou shalt do that. You should use well-understood faith-based groups that are already out there funneling aid to these groups, aid that is running out, groups like the Knights of Columbus. There's a group called the Nineveh Reconstruction Committee, which is doing wonderful work out there. There are a number of them. But the point is, where are your tax dollars going? H.R. 390 says it should go to take care of these people. This, by the way, just to anticipate a problem. Well, you're just taking care of the Christians because you're a Christian nation. We've actually heard this from people in our own country. No, as I said before, I think there's nothing wrong with our nation taking care of Christians or Jews or Muslims or anyone else that we choose to say are victims of genocide. But this is a national security issue for us. It isn't just getting them back into their homes as a humanitarian gesture. It is the beginning of this long road toward pluralism that's a national security imperative for us. So what we've got to do is get the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which is the committee of the United States Senate of jurisdiction on this H.R. 390, and they got to move it. It's not complicated. When they come back in September, they have got to pass this bill because time's a wasting. I've seen studies that said if we don't start getting more money in, then Christians are going to start deciding we cannot do this. The West and the United States is not going to stand with us. So time is wasting. This is very important. It is humanitarian. It is moral. It is the right thing to do. But it also has to do with the national security of the United States and the threat of violent Islamic terrorism against us and against our children and grandchildren.
All right, Tom Farr, we're going to have to leave it right there. Again, folks, what we are working on is getting H.R. 390 moving, and we are going to talk about how you can be involved in that and how you can see your tax dollars mobilized in the Iraq and Syria Genocide Accountability Act to come to the aid of those who the United States government has already recognized are victims of genocide in the region. Tom Farr, thank you for joining us today on The Reconnect.
Pleasure. Glad to be with you.
All right. So, friends, you might be asking yourself right now, all right, I need some specific information to in order to do what Carmen's asking me to do. Well, the specific information is this. Number one, we need to pray. All right. We need to pray as if God is in control of all of this, because indeed he is. We also need to call the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That number is 202-224-4651. 202-224-4651. You need to tell them that H.R. 390 is something that you would like to see moved by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee before the Senate, so that Congress can actually make good on its commitment to help these Christians, to bring relief and justice to Christians living in northern Iraq who have suffered so much at the hands of ISIS. We're trying to help them stay in their country. We're trying to help them stay in what you and I would call the cradle of Christianity. All right, friends. So the third thing that I think that each and every one of us can and should do is partner with whatever ministry it is who is engaged in that region. Maybe you want to help the Knights of Columbus rebuild the town that they're working on. Maybe you want to partner with the Iraqi Christian Relief Council and actually adopt a family. Maybe you want to partner with Samaritan's Purse, doing really good on the ground work there as well. Maybe you want to engage with the Philos Project and all of the ways that they are influencing the life of people on the ground there. Whatever it is, I want you to engage today at the heart level and at the spirit level in terms of prayer. I want you to engage at the political level in terms of giving the Senate Foreign Relations Committee a call. And I want you to engage on the, hey, this is my brother, this is my sister in Christ. They live halfway around the world. They need my material support. So I want you to consider how you want to provide some material support today by partnering with a ministry working in the region. So the phone call you need to make, one more time, is at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 202-224-4651. All right, friends, this is The Reconnect, and I'm Carmen LeBurge. You can connect with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for the podcast, donate to the ministry, and please share today's show with someone new.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.